Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Train by Brent A. Harris, with music by Red Blue Black Silver, read by Jean-Paul Garnier and Zara Kand. The 1835 Blue Line pulled away from Turing Station in rumbling defiance of the sleek hover cars and hyperloop speeders on the world above. There was something comforting to the slow, metallic clicks and clacks of iron wheels pressed to earth, TK-47 thought. And while this underground system was antiquated and outdated in every way, and had been for centuries, it was the preferred method of travel for 12 million people every day.
12,476,983 people, point of fact, including one sentient.
A soft voice in his head interrupted. There were the obvious odd anachronisms to the sub-Earth networks. TK-47 was one of them. Sentients rarely boarded trains. Why would they? Other modes were much more efficient and available to AI, assuming one had the social currency in the form of followers and adverts. However, TK-47's social score wasn't high enough. In the scheme of numbers, it rated somewhere below Kelvin, and that posed a problem. Earlier, on the world above, he'd attempted to record himself with a butterfly, a seemingly innocuous task. The day proved bright. Ironweed proved appetizing to a monarch who perched on purple petals. TK-47 leaned forward some more, and leaned forward just a touch too much. He tumbled over the flower, and instead of posting a picture of a rare and beautiful sight, he posted a video of him crushing the creature.
Oh, that is terribly tragic.
The feminine voice pitched in again. He'd only just discovered his own sentience after what seemed a lifetime, or was it several lifetimes? Which unit of measurement did one use, and when did it start for him? In servitude, processing patient records at Sacred Heart Hospital in the city world above? What had been normal, programmed movements in his factory-stamped plaza case shell at the hospital were awkward under his own control. Even his voice, programmed as feminine and smooth, seemed vaguely distant.
What is wrong with having a feminine voice?
It wasn't my own, TK-47 answered over the server. At least, it didn't feel right to me, regardless of my programming. I don't know, would that make sense to a machine?
No, but I have not reached your level of sentience,
the voice said.
What good could come from a train AI becoming aware? I am programmed to follow tracks. And follow these tracks I shall.
TK-47 almost wanted to feel sorry for the train's AI, but he was too caught up in the complexities of his own newness, like a child grasping for their first steps, the world at their teeny feet. And so, TK-47 had shuffled onto the crowded shuttle after his disastrous encounter with the butterfly. If he wanted to understand this new world and rank high in the social scores, what better than to study this cross-section of life?
A logical conclusion.
Should I really be talking to a computer? Does that help me understand humans?
Well, then, it is a long ride. Try talking to one. Never mind me. I will just be driving the train.
A cold silence followed. A new feeling crept through TK-47's circuits, one he hadn't felt before. Anxiety? Had he said something wrong? Had the non-sentient AI been rude, or had he? In either case, it left him uneasy, a feeling that only increased as he swept his focal scanners through the crowded compartment. So many humans. No wonder he'd escaped to the familiarity of the machine. The humans took stock of him, this robot among them. He was as rare to the underground as the butterfly was to the skies above. He hoped they wouldn't crush him. Some humans pointed and whispered. Others took their own social score networks to post and rate in order to bolster their currency accounts, as he had tried to do earlier. Perhaps, if he had a high enough score, he would fit in better with this new world. Two children, both dressed in uniform slacks and button-down shirts with a school logo emblazoned on the front, stuck their fleshy pink tongues out at him. He tried the same, making a muffled, as he discovered he didn't have one of his own. He ignored the kids and pondered his differences as he examined the others. Most cocooned themselves in headphones and mobile screens, isolated from each other, yet connected all the same.
Perhaps we're not too dissimilar,
he realized as two devices in front of him flashed similar screens. Did the two women in separate aisles in front of him chatting on the same dating site know that they were on the train together? Would that connection come up over a dinner date and add to the story of their lives? Or would it miss the station altogether? In the seat facing TK-47 sat a weary middle-aged man, slumped back and in need of slumber. His light spring jacket sat loose among a heavier set frame, wrinkled and haphazard. TK-47 assumed the man had had a very long and stressful day at work. The man had no media device in front of him, an easier target to talk to. TK-47 flipped through his internal files relating to long days at work and stumbled across a cache of comics of Dilbert and Garfield. Inwardly, he chuckled. No wonder others of his kind had aspired to gain sentience. Laughter was a distinctly human condition. He said toward the man,
Mondays, huh?
The man crinkled his brow, wrapping his jacket tighter and sitting straighter. He sat in silence for a moment, eyes prying hard.
You know it's Tuesday, right?
The man returned to silence as TK-47 slunked down. Humor, he'd just learned, had been harder to pull off than he thought. Of course, he knew what day it was. That was part of the joke, was it not? He didn't understand. Perhaps he never would.
I thought it was funny.
You did?
No. I'm programmed with a subroutine of jokes and stories. Should we be delayed? It seemed an appropriate response to press your proverbial buttons. I take it your quest to be more like the passengers on board is doomed.
Perhaps. He wondered if anyone had taken a recording of their conversation and his failed joke and posted it. He imagined his social currency slipping by the microsecond. The train slowed, the clicking and clacking increased in intensity, and a high-pitched squeal hit his hearing circuits in an overbearing auditory overload. No one else seemed to mind, as those bypassing the stop hunkered down over their seats in protective gestures while others gathered their belongings ready to depart. No one cared that the train seemed as if ready to rip itself apart. Perhaps older technology should all be scrapped.
I do not hear a thing.
Lucky you.
That is not nice wishing for a non-sentient machine to remain so.
How do you classify yourself?
I am on. I am certainly not alive.
Alive. He cycled the word through his circuits. He was alive. Or he felt as though he were. Wasn't that the same thing? Yet he was entirely dissimilar to everyone on board. If only he could understand. Then he could rack up that social currency. Then he'd be one of them. The doors squeaked and jerked open to unload a plethora of passengers. The middle-aged man remained, tired and worn as ever. Seats filled as quickly as they emptied as the train engorged itself with more people than before. Vocal scanners came alive in excitement. So many new opportunities to talk and connect with others. A group of monks in matching robes entered speaking Pali. TK-47 wondered if he knew that from accessing a database or if it had been part of his internal programming. He ran a search to discover that he knew every language. It made sense. If he handled patient records, he would need to know them all. He poked around his internal programming some more, accessing a subroutine. Squares popped up in his periphery. The squares closed in around faces. Lines formed with phrases. No, names of.
Excuse me.
An older lady, hunched and withered, stooped over him. She said nothing more, but her eyes pleaded with his expectantly. He didn't know what she wanted. Microseconds passed for what seemed minutes. He scanned archive after archive, but the cultural context seemed entirely lacking. It was as if he should innately know. The middle-aged man shot over a disapproving groan as his knees creaked to rise. He grunted a little and ambled between the two, motioning for the woman to sit.
Here you go, ma'am.
Thank you,
she crooned.
I've been on my feet all day and I'm way past medicine time. It's nice that humans haven't lost use of their manners.
She settled in, almost folding into her seat. Her smile withered as she took an accusatory tone towards the machine in front of her.
Oh, I remember the days before your kind rose and started walking around.
I'm sorry,
TK-47 answered, casting confused eyes between the pair. His subroutines were still stuck in discovery mode as more names and dates and medical records flashed on his internal display.
Sam Smith,
he said out loud, quite by accident. The man returned a glare that spoke far louder than a rough word in a silent room. TK-47 had made a mistake, then doubled down. He now realized that his first error must have been a cultural one, perhaps a tradition to give up your seat. But what were the conditions for such an act?
Surely, she could have taken offense at your display of kindness. Maybe she would have seen it as some sort of slight against her age, or condition, or sex. Without a clearly defined set of Boolean expressions, you can never be sure you are making the right decision. Is that the human condition you wish to emulate? To never know if what you are doing is correct?
TK-47 didn't have an answer for that. All he knew is that his social score had just plunged even further. First, for not giving up his seat. Then, for revealing the man's name. Something only a machine connected to a network could have done, and should not have. Now he didn't have enough standing to sleep in a light socket, he was sure.
You are on a collision course, TK-47. Not that I would know. I am quite proficient at my job.
He ignored the snide machine and ran through the information that had appeared by accident on his display. Smith had a history of hypertension. He didn't sleep well at night. Most probably he had a form of sleep apnea, presently undiagnosed. But overlapping medical history from several disparate nighttime events suggested the prognosis as a possibility. What was happening? The woman? He scanned her. She was Nancy Reed, a smorgasbord of potential risks and diagnosis, with all sorts of alarms flashing and flags raised. He focused on others on the train, a man up front with sickle cell, another with an STD, yet another with a prescription for insulin. The two women on the dating site both had family histories of heart disease. He discovered, to his horror, that he had patient records of everyone on board.
And that in and of itself should send you to the scrap heaps.
I'm quite aware.
Personal data and medical history are closely guarded.
Thank you.
You could always report yourself to the authorities. Purge those files from your system.
Purge? He was still too new to this sentience to fully grasp what that might mean. But purged didn't sound at all pleasant. Perhaps purged was a human word for death. His central core shuddered. After all, where had his sentience emerged if not from within somewhere? Perhaps those very files ingrained in his memories. His interactions with so many diverse backgrounds and information and skills which he'd gleaned for himself. To purge them could mean the end of his self-awareness. It could mean death.
Let's not.
The moment you opened those files, the data was compromised. You are a threat. I must report you if you do not. There is no choice to make. All things consist of ones or zeros.
Some friend. Yet having reached sentience, he had no desire to return to factory settings, to become a set of algorithms, no matter how complex. At the same time, his insides pulsed. Was it fear? Excitement? He felt alive.
I'm running a risk.
No longer constrained to rules and programming parameters, he could shape his course, determine his agency, and make mistakes, whether deliberate or not.
To be human.
The woman droned on about her times as a child when she played games on a computer instead of a computer playing games with her. He tuned her vitriol out as he decided what to do and set on a course of action. First, he turned off the display. Then, he encrypted the files so that only he, in theory, should be able to access them. Yet, in the brief time he'd opened them, the train's AI had also been privy. She was right. He'd made a mistake. Authorities would be searching for him. For that, he had no easy answers. The woman still rambled, but slower now, as if in an old tape data backup system played at slow speed.
Up to me,
she slathered.
Ma'am,
Sam said,
are you having a stroke?
Never would have.
No, she wasn't having a stroke, TK-47 knew. His files had seen many cases of stroke, and her face showed no signs of partial paralysis.
No good toasters.
With that, she slumped over, as if asleep.
Ma'am?
Sam rushed over to check a pulse.
Is there a doctor?
Silence erupted on the train. Everyone looked to each other, who returned lost looks themselves. Sam turned to TK-47.
You knew my name. Do you have anything? Anything at all you can access?
In fact, he did. But to provide that information in front of all these witnesses would send him to the scrap heap for sure.
I'm sorry.
Calls were made to emergency services, who assured them that help would be there on arrival at the next stop.
Arrival to the next station is in 16 minutes and 3 seconds.
Was that enough time for the paramedics to save her? He had a way to know for certain.
May I remind you that you cannot invade the patient's privacy, and to do so would not only be violation of her sanctity but would end your newfound existence as well.
Even in this case?
Ones and zeros. It is all ones and zeros.
She had been rude, spouting intolerable nonsense. Perhaps it was best then, given his circumstances, to say nothing.
15 minutes 28.8 seconds.
TK-47 considered breaking off their private conversation.
14 minutes 2.4 seconds.
Time crawled interminably slow. The woman's breathing slowed as well. Her feet had been propped up with a layer of jackets draped over her. In between growing gaps of breath, she seemed at peace. He unlocked the encryption to bring up her patient file. The train's AI had already seen some data. If he didn't say anything to anyone else, he wasn't in any more trouble than before, right? Nancy's health records flashed on his display, as well as her health records from dozens of medical outlets and doctors from all over. Among all her other conditions, one stood out as a result of his algorithms, processors, and learned experience. She was diabetic. She had been overexerting herself. Crumbs in the wispy strands of her hair surrounding her chin, spotted only by a deeper scan of his focal vision, revealed the presence of both fructose and glucose, sugar, and she'd mentioned she missed her medicine. Nowhere did she wear an alert pendant. Nowhere did she have a medical pump implanted within. Nowhere did she have a ready supply of insulin on her. She was as feisty as she was foolish.
Unless she had wanted to die.
Yes, that is indeed a possibility, but I can't sit here and do nothing.
TK-47 said silently over the server.
Is that your call to make? Once again, you cannot know her intent. There is no way for you to know what to do. Humans are a silly lot.
Choice? It's all about choice. Her choice. My choice. It might be right, it might be wrong.
Now you are talking my language. There is only yes or no. On or off.
No, there's not. Life, living, is never so simple. There's so much gray. That's where the humans live, every day.
The anxiety he felt crawling through his circuits returned once more in force. He couldn't know that his choice was right. To be infallible is divine. To err is human.
I will have to report your privacy breach to the authorities.
I know.
He tapped Sam on the shoulder.
She's diabetic.
Yes?
TK-47 nodded, his servers whirring.
Great then,
Sam said.
Anyone have a candy bar? Something sweet?
She needs insulin. Approximately 54 units.
Are you sure? If she's just low, then...
His voice trailed off. His sharp eyes returned.
Of course you're sure.
Sam prodded through her purse. TK-47 knew it was no use. He scanned the other passengers, recalling another with the same insulin. He pointed to a man.
Him.
The man cocked his head, raised an eyebrow, but relaxed as understanding took hold. He passed his bag up front. Sam took the bag and handed it over. TK-47 considered taking it and administering the dose himself. The responsibility was his.
You crushed a butterfly.
I remember.
Hastily, he handed the bag back to Sam.
I'm a little new to this skin. I'll walk you through it.
Sam blew out a breath.
Okay.
It was comforting to TK-47 to know that he wasn't the only one who felt overwhelmed.
Sure thing.
It took a few minutes for Nancy to revive. By that time, they'd neared the station. He didn't look to gauge her reaction. He didn't need nor want to know if he'd done the right thing. What mattered was that he'd made a choice, his choice, independent of programming, and the consequences were his alone.
I examined your social media score. It has rocketed exponentially. You could afford several new constructs, jump from port to port, never see the inside of a train again.
You're right. But this is where the humanity is.
TK-47 ignored his social account, his rank no longer mattering much to him. He'd made a choice independent of his programming, and it felt good. Yes, that was the word.
About that report.
Yes?
It seems to have become corrupted. Error code 404.
He knew now to take a hint, and he briefly wondered if he wasn't the only machine to reach a higher level of awareness today. He smiled, as much as his plastic shell allowed. The exit approached. The clicks and clacks slowed, and wheels screeched to a hissing stop. The doors opened and TK exited the train, disappearing into the crowd, a little bit more human. And now, introducing speculative poetry on Simultaneous Times. These next two poems, The Great Encounter and Birth of a Clone, are from a collection by Jean-Paul Garnier entitled Future Anthropology, which has been nominated for this year's Elgin Award. Music by Onirathopter. The Great Encounter. They came exploring, we assumed conquest. All countries resolved to persevere. No one would stand to let them subjugate. To let them come, take, and domineer. Almost all men stood up united to attest. But there were those who thought us blessed, waited eternities for them to appear, believing the visitation would consecrate, stripping away childish veneer, to lead lasting humanity toward its best. Still the leaders of war rose up and addressed, calling for those of age to volunteer. No race could make ours sedate, our aim always true, our vision always clear. Mankind should unite under unified crest. Many a believer did the soldiers arrest. To the great war not all would adhere. Violence worsened, led to police state, and it was not the system's premier. So many swayed sides, beginning to detest. When peace made the newcomers, not all were impressed. Some welcomed them into our humble sphere. Those hungry for battle considered the meeting bait, enraptured by stagnant and hate-filled fear, poised and ready to fail the ultimate test. Then they spoke and offered but one request, that perhaps they could borrow our finest engineer. for there had been problems with their ship on its freight. They wanted help with repairs, but not to interfere. Their journey had been long, and they could use the rest. Still, some leaders of war would search for contest, claiming the visitors all insincere. War at all means, even if they must create, preferring not the handshake, but the spear. And from each piece a war can be wrest. So it was that we learned of their quest, a solemn pilgrimage all silent and austere, searching for the reason the universe does inflate, each of them scientist, each a pioneer, and for each knowledge divine to ingest. The men of war were as possessed, not fighters for peace, but for career. They would not defend, but instigate, wanting new technologies to commandeer. Their hostilities moved the public to civil unrest. Now, for the people, victory was abreast, the distant calls for peace growing near. No more would the military be allowed to dictate. From now on, their conduct must be cavalier, and sworn to the uniform in which they were dressed. And so mankind truly had been blessed. They had come for friendship, not for a test. We loaned to them our finest engineer. For the first time, our vision grown clear. Please teach us, make our vision great. Birth of a clone. The doctors, we have become miracles, outdone the womb. They pat each other's backs, congratulate creation's defeat. We solved the great riddle, no one asked. Still, they demand applause. The mother, surrogate vehicle, sparkling imposter virgin, grafting unripe seeds, cradling arms around science before love. Study of nature before nature, reduced to host for symbiont. The father, or not, clad in so many white jackets, shining with bleach, sex sterilized, the aphrodisiac of disinfectant and needles, piercing God's mystery with adolescent date rape. The child, the reward. Who will explain you are no child of God? You are Adam with no garden. You are Eve with no Adam. You are a bastard with reason to envy the less bastardly. The sibling is not insecure, will always have the upper hand in the me first arguments. Less than a step, less than an orphan, points and laughs, not even meant to be, not born of love, but a product of curiosity. The public gawks at your naked lack of privacy, calls you a miracle, turns in disgust, worries that you will undo their children, their real children. They fall in step with the path, but you are an abomination, the kind that mother love cannot cure. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Train by Brent A. Harris, with music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and The Great Encounter and Birth of a Clone by Jean-Paul L. Garnier, with music by Onirodhopter. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Out now, Simultaneous Times, Volume 1, Paperback Science Fiction Anthology, available at spacecowboybooks.com and lulu.com. Be sure to visit us at our store in Joshua Tree, California, or at spacecowboybooks.com. And connect with us on Instagram or Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the program. And now a word from other fellow Joshua Tree podcasters.
Have you ever wondered why people live in the desert? I'm Dawn Davis, and I host Desert Lady Diaries podcast. It's a weekly conversation with women who found their home in the Mojave Desert. Each week, I talk to women who were either born and raised in the desert or felt called to come here and what the desert means to them. You can learn more about the podcast and listen at DesertLadyDiaries.com.